Hello, everybody, and welcome to I am watching all of Johnny Depp's movies, and I don't know what to do with that information, otherwise known as Depp Impact. I know this is not the only podcast that was started during the COVID-19 times, but it is potentially the only one named after an actor that doesn't appear in the movie it's named after. Today, I'm very excited to have a very sweet friend with me. She is a poet, a great poet. She's an awesome arts administrator. She's a performer and just a general joy to be around, who also has kick-ass hair. Please welcome to the podcast, Mariah Gant.
Oh my God, that intro? I will never have a better intro than that. That was awesome. Hello.
Hi, I'm so happy you're here. And also, every word is true. Mariah, fellow Leo, where can the people find you if they wanted to find you on the social medias?
Oh my God, if you're ever interested in finding me for some, ridiculous reason, I'm just kidding. You can catch me at my human email. My human Instagram is MG Willikers, which is the letters EMGEE. WILLIKERS. Or you can also follow my poetry Instagram, which is mariah.g.poetry.
Yay. And I will link all of that in the description of the podcast. You know where to find me. I'm at Less Than a Muffin. If you're listening to this, you already know that because you probably know me. I'd also like to signal boost the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. Yeah. It's an amazing organization that I think deserves your time and energy.
Yeah, and can I quickly signal boost the Okra Project? Checked that out, please do and donate and support as much as possible.
Yeah, two amazing organizations. Yeah. Because even if your timeline has returned to normal, Black Lives Matter.
Always.
Best in the world, always and forever. Speaking of no Black people in this movie.
None, but we do get a moment of blackface that I totally forgot about.
I sure did too. And if you're listening to this, you're probably like, what the fuck is a movie that would have blackface in it? Even for, a dwarf in blackface, so even better. It is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus is the movie that we're talking about today. So this is a movie that came out in 2009. It had a budget of $30 million, which is so much money. It's directed by Terry Gilliam, who, as we know, is a fan of both the weird and moderately offensive. It made $60 million in the box office. It has a 64% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it is also the last film of the late, great Heath Ledger. Now, Mariah, when I pitched being on the podcast to you, you gave me a few choices, some of the more popular movies, and then The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. What made this movie stick out in your head?
Okay, I actually remember this is one of a movie that I remember going to see at the movies by myself. And my mom, we went to the movies together and she saw one movie and I saw this movie. And I remember going and sitting through the film and then having to try to explain it to my mother afterwards. And I really had a hard time. I wouldn't say I was a huge Heath Ledger fan before this movie, but mm-hmm. I definitely had seen The Dark Knight and was like, would love to see more of his work and was interested in the story behind the movie, I guess. So that was what made me go see it. Yeah.
Interesting. And when you walked out the first time you saw it, were you like, how did you feel about this film, I guess?
Yo, I was blown away by the imagery. Of course, the imagery is just like out of control in this movie from start to finish.
It is beautiful. I will give it that.
It's so beautiful. And I think I've also always had a weird fascination with carnival life and, you know, like Water for Elephants. And people think I'm ridiculous because Freak Show is my favorite season of American Horror Story. I've just always been so fascinated with carnival life. And I think that element of it from the beginning, that kind of like broken down roadie show, I just was like, this is so weird. So yeah. I walked out of the theater immediately being like, okay, I don't know what I saw, but I think I understand some of the themes, maybe. But it was beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is beautiful. It had art direction. It was nominated for 2 Oscars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Costumes and art direction, mm-hmm. which, yes.
Yes.
Like, 100, yes. And I watched this movie, I guess, I didn't see it in theaters, but I probably saw it around the same time that you did, mm-hmm. when Heath Ledger was, like, riding high off of this Dark Knight sort of fame and success and had passed away, and people were blaming that movie for it, but then all of a sudden he became, like, a phenomenon in the zeitgeist almost, you know?
Yeah.
And I was searching out most of his films. So yes, this was one of those, like, on that path of seeing, like, whoa, how did he drove himself mad, you know? Like, narrative that we were trying to assign to him.
Mm-hmm.
When really it's like, people can be troubled. And that's, and also famous. That's what happens.
Yeah, people can be troubled and very smart and make very interesting and intriguing work in that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be them driving themselves mad, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess I saw it back then, but I didn't remember anything about this movie. And I revisited it this morning because I was like, I got to be fresh on this one because I'm never going to remember this movie. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember it the first time. I remembered Andrew Garfield was in it.
Yes. And also so good.
He's so good.
He's just such a good boy, start to finish. And I was like, oh, I forgot he's acting in this. Like, he's acting. Wow.
Yeah. And he actually gets to use his real accent. Which yes. Is like, we never hear that. He uses his real eyebrows. They're big and bushy. And they're out there. And he's so good.
Yeah. So talented.
He's that Lily Cole is great in it as mm-hmm, well. Mm-hmm. Had a run where she was in a lot of movies, but she was just kind of like that girl.
That girl for a minute, yeah.
Christopher Plummer's awesome in it.
What else can we expect?
He's like truly legendary because he stumbles around as a big old dumb drunk. And Tom Waits is just, you can't see, but I'm chef's kissing.
Oh man, I feel it. I feel it.
What perfect casting to have Tom Waits as the devil.
The devil. It's truly so on point. And I feel like his, there's just something about his vocal quality that is so uncomparable. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah, it feels otherworldly already. So the mm-hmm. fact that, like, we're watching him shapeshift into, like, snakes and shit. We're like, oh yeah, that's it. That's
that.
I would expect nothing else.
Oh my god.
But so we're like kind of dipping into like who these people in the movie are a little bit. But I would like to issue this challenge to you in 5 to 10 minutes, because there's a lot in this movie. Can you tell us what happens in the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus? This is just plot. You can get as specific as you want, but mostly just the plot of the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Okay, so I'll start with a little bit of outside of the actual movie. So the story goes that Heath Ledger was working on this movie and he died while it was in production, and Johnny Depp, Jude Law. I always want to call him the wrong name.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. I always want to call him Colin Firth, and I'm like, totally different man.
Yes. Very different careers.
Very different careers. Those three kind of decide to jump in and take over some of his parts that he is out of in the movie. So that's also something that really intrigued me in wanting to watch this movie, is kind of that backstory of people wanting to continue this movie for him and his legacy, and his friends being like, I totally want to jump in and help. Okay, yeah. Cool. So the actual movie, Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. Dr. Parnassus, we open, and it's, like I said earlier, this kind of like run down almost carnival show. And they never really tell you, and this contains Christopher Plummer as Dr. Parnassus. Andrew Garfield is like this cute little, I don't know, boy that they've picked up, and he plays this Hermes character for most of it. I don't know.
Anton.
And then Lily Cole is the daughter of Dr. Parnassus. And they all kind of travel in this little show. Oh, and Vern Troyer is also in it. And Vern Troyer is Percy, who just seems to be this like lifelong friend of Dr. Parnassus as well. They started off as monks together. Another weird track. Anyway, so they're all on this little road show together, and we don't necessarily find out exactly what, but there's this kind of entrance into Dr. Parnassus's actual mind that allows people's own imaginations to take over as well. And you kind of get a glimpse of that at the beginning. This kid gets lost in there, and you kind of see that it's really, it can be really tricky, and you have to make sure that you make the right choices once you're in the Imaginarium. And you don't necessarily understand what those choices are right away, too. Mm-hmm. And then the story goes on a little bit more, and we find out that Dr. Parnassus made a deal with the devil many years ago. The first deal was to have eternal life. Then, which we all know is not what we want.
Not the move.
Not the move, man, but he wanted it. So then Dr. Parnassus is like, he sees this beautiful woman and he falls in love with her, essentially. And he has to ask Dr. Parnassus to make him mortal again. And so he becomes mortal again. They fall in love with each other. They have a child together, Lily Cole. And then he makes another deal. That deal with the devil also means that he promises his firstborn, which will be Lily, that when she turns 16, she will be given over to the devil. Right. So of course the movie opens up, and we're about 5 days from Lily's, or a couple days from Lily's, what is her name? Valentina's birthday.
It's me, Valentina.
We're a few days from her birthday, and so he has to make, am I right? He has to make, Dr. Parnassus has to make five people, through his Imaginarium, people are given a choice. Uh-huh. And he has to try to guide people in his mind to make a choice for the right side, which is, it's not.
Yeah, I think he's trying to sell, I could also be wrong, but I believe he needs five souls to give to the devil in exchange for his daughter.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's like in the Imaginarium, they can make two decisions. And one decision is basically going with the devil, and the other decision is like choosing their own enlightenment. That's also kind of inspired by Parnassus, I guess.
Yeah.
And he has to make a deal. Like you said, five people have to go to the devil's side for him to be able to have Valentina freed from this, this life of having to go and work for the devil after turning 16. But then, of course, along the way, we meet Heath Ledger, and Heath's character name is...
I think it's Tony.
Tony. And they find him, and he's hanging under a bridge, and Valentina decides to rescue him and becomes very entranced by him, as anybody would. And he's serious, can't really remember too much about himself. He has amnesia, or so he claims. But we quickly find out that he was a big-time millionaire, billionaire, moneymaker.
Shyster.
General bad dude, because we find out was quickly, he was in some pretty bad dealings with the mafia and taking their money and using their money in the wrong way. What am I missing? Oh, and basically what happens is, like, when he goes into Dr. Parnassus's Imaginarium, and the trick that they did for the movie is every time he goes in there, he becomes a different person. And so the first time he is himself, but with the body of Johnny Depp. And I mean, he doesn't know that that's Johnny Depp. I guess I explained that weird. He just appears as different people in the Imaginarium. That's what I should say. He appears as different people. His appearance has changed. Yeah. And basically he ends up having to, like, make a life decision about if he wants to be good or not. And he ends up choosing the bad, and Valentina has fallen in love with him and is trying to follow him, and she won't see that Andrew Garfield is in love with him and follow him, so she gets kind of caught up in it. And oh my god, I'm doing a terrible job. This is not linear in the slightest. This movie is so hard.
The movie isn't linear either.
It's not linear. So the final story is Tony is in the Imaginarium, and he has to make this decision on if he wants to, like I said, be essentially good or essentially bad. And he makes the wrong choice, and he ends up falling into the abyss.
Presumably,
and never to be seen or heard from again. And in the end, Lily ends up, oh my god, I'm gonna call her Valentina, I swear. Valentina ends up falling for Anton, we see and discover. And they get married.
And have a baby.
Have a little baby. And I guess Dr. Parnassus doesn't know this right away. He thinks that he's lost her and he's really upset and blah, blah, blah. And he kind of spends his whole life, the rest of his life, being poor and looking for her. And she walks past him one day. And that's how he finds out she's married to Anton, aka Andrew Garfield. Woo!
That was great. You did great.
It sounded like a bunch of gobbledygook. And you know what? That's because this story is just straight up.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, even listening to you try to simplify all the things that were happening, you know, it's like, oh wow, yeah, you're right, there's a shit ton that happens in this movie that, like, we it doesn't even, the plot doesn't compute when you boil it down like
that.
Because the Imaginarium sequences by themselves, until you get to Colin Farrell's, like, the first two are basically just like paintings. And you're like, oh cool, great job, this is really awesome. I guess what we're seeing is that Tony has a bunch of different faces.
Yes, exactly. That, like,
even he wasn't aware of, because he's a face bastard. But, like, I think that you did the best you possibly could this movie down to its I think the thing that, like, really jumped out to me on this viewing for me in this movie with all these, like, different people playing him was just the idea of, like, he's so bad. He is such a bad dude that Heath Ledger is is extremely likable. And I think all the actors they hired to play Tony in different iterations are all extremely likable in spite of themselves.
Yes.
Because they're all kind of like known for being interesting people.
Yeah, I would say they're known for having that kind of inexplainable, what we call the it factor, I guess. They have something that kind of draws you in and you're like, wow, why do I feel like I know this person already?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I think Colin Farrell fares the best of the three stand-ins. That's my opinion, I guess. I don't know if you have a different opinion about the Imaginarium Tonys.
I mean, we get to see him for the most amount of time, too. And I think the payoff of him being the final Tony is very good. I love Jude Law, so I also really like his sequence, but I will agree that Colin Farrell does a great job. And I mean, Johnny Depp is it's great that he's the first one too, because he does that very stereotypical, like when he looks in the water and realizes it's not his face, he does the very stereotypical Johnny Depp of, oh fuck, okay then, and like continues, and it fits so well.
That is a good one. So let's talk about Johnny in this movie. He's not in much, but he's there. So yeah, he does do that like weird timing so well.
Yeah,
I also think that it's crazy that like, and Terry Gilliam kind of said this in interviews, that it's good that Depp is the first one that we see, because they look so much alike in this movie.
They do.
I was like, when they lifted the mask off of him at first, I went, oh, Heath Ledger looks like Johnny Depp. Like, I didn't even.
And it's the like dark eyeliner that they get, and it's that same kind of like grungy but still super handsome. I don't know. It looks like they put Heath Ledger in a time machine and sent him forward about 10 years and he came out as Johnny Depp. Like, I totally believe that that's what happened.
Yeah, same. And I think it's interesting too, because I looked up like how long Johnny was on set, because this felt very Jack Sparrow.
I saw this too, yes.
He was only on set for a day and 3 hours. Like,
one day. What the fuck?
Because they couldn't break his contract for other stuff, so they just did like one take.
They're like, we gotta get this and let's go.
This is a $30 million movie. Like, the idea of one take for something that is so insanely complicated when you're working with green screen bullshit.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with Tom Waits, who I can imagine is not that consistent.
Oh, absolutely not. I can't even imagine trying to film, you know, being in the Imaginarium. Also, like, how do you explain that to somebody to come in and do in one day? You know, all right, here's the world that we're creating for you, so have at it. I'd be like, I'm sorry, I need to sit with this a little bit longer. What?
Like, wait, I'm jumping on lily pads. there's an older woman who I'm going to make.
I'm going to dance with, what?
And then I'm going to steal her jewelry. Oh yeah, also all the imaginary shit just starts with him stealing something from people.
Oh my god, yeah, that's very true.
I saw another interview with Terry Gilliam too, where he was talking to Heath Ledger on set, and Heath was like throwing himself around and like acting like a wild man. And Gilliam was like, oh, you're just doing Johnny Depp, right? I was like, what? I don't see Depp in Ledger's performance. I mean,
no.
I guess that they're both like disarming, but I see like Ledger in Depp clearly because he's doing Ledger. Man. But
yeah,
I don't. Yeah, I think, I mean, Johnny's segment is so short.
It's so quick. And I don't know why. I think before rewatching it again this weekend, I thought Johnny has another reappearance. I thought for some reason he comes back at the end, but I was like, oh damn, this is it. This is all we get.
I think there was a scene in the trailer that had all four of them together.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I seem to remember that, like, they all peek around a corner or something.
Which maybe they just did just for, like, you know, cutesy purposes, but I really thought that for some reason they were all in it. Maybe not, like, actually in at the same time, but, you know, appeared to be in the world. I don't know.
There's some, like, lost footage as well, though, because I know that this was on the shelf for a really long time. So, like, I do wonder how much unused stuff there is.
Yeah, I read that Heath actually did do some scenes in the Imaginarium, and they claimed that those scenes were quote unquote lost, but apparently, somebody has them. I think I saw that you can, if you dig around on the internet, you can find them, but he did a few scenes in the Imaginarium, and then it got put on the shelf for a while. And then when they came back to reapproach it, they judged the storyline a bit to make it work.
Yeah. I read something that they didn't really change any script shit, like from the casting, which I also think is kind of interesting, because I wonder what Ledger's performance would have been like, if it would have made more cohesive sense if he was in all of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's a fun little experiment, though.
It totally is. And I mean, it made me, of course, working in theater, it made me think a lot about how could that work in theater? Like, would people in a live performance setting be able to follow along and agree with that for long enough?
I don't know either, but it's kind of funny because I feel like theater, we expect, and like, I think about this all the time when I'm thinking about the difference between film and theater, like, we're so conditioned in a theater to be like, oh yeah, that door leads to the rest of the house, you know, that's, even though it's just a door in a wall, it's backstage, but we're like, oh yeah, clearly that door goes to the rest of the home that we're not seeing. But in film, like, we are also conditioned to see everything.
Yeah.
That it almost feels like, I think a theater audience seeing this movie would be way more forgiving of the, like, sort of ideas that are being spun around than a film audience. Like, maybe that's why this has such mixed reviews. Because film people are like, well, I'm supposed to, how could I don't use my imagination. That's why I'm here. So you can show me your Imaginarium.
Exactly.
Which I actually think Terry Gilliam's quite good at, is letting us in on the weird that he's, you know, buckle up, we're going, here we
exactly. go. No, I would totally agree. He has kind of a similar hold on us. I mean, I think many film directors have this, but I would say almost like Quentin Tarantino, who, you know, poopy person, but like is able to create a world, and kind of no matter what that world is, those fans of that director are like, oh yeah, I'm in. I don't really care. I don't need, it's less about, the story becomes very important, but you know, the world, the vibe of it, you're going to be interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just rewatched Fear and Loathing for this podcast. Fear and Loathing in Vegas, also a Terry Gilliam movie. Very similar plot, like, what's plot, you know?
Yeah. Do we need it?
Yeah, like, let's just have some more lizard people. And in this, it's like, clearly we want to spend as much time in the Imaginarium as possible. Or when we're not in the Imaginarium, like, that pageant wagon that they perform on.
Yes.
Is gorgeous.
I love it.
The costume, like Valentina's wig for the first half of the movie, that like stark curly white big sort of like Marie Antoinette.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Ah, it is gorge.
It's I again, like I said, I'm fascinated with that like carnival life, and there's just something about it where you expect it on the outside to be so run down, and a lot of the little pieces themselves are pretty bleh, but the stark contrast of like them in costume and Anthony Garfield like painted fully silver. I mean, he doesn't even have to say he's Hermes. And from the beginning, I'm like, oh, he's Hermes. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know him either.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Do you have a favorite? So you said you like Jude Law. Do you have like a favorite segment of this movie? Because I think it's worth it to look at it in segments, I guess.
Oh yeah. You know what really stood out to me this time watching it was the scene where they find Heath Ledger. Oh my God, I was so shook. And it's really, I don't think it had that same effect on me when I watched it the first time. To see him like hanging under it's under a bridge. It was so scary. And even in that moment, I knew he comes back to life. Like, I knew he's also not really dead at that point because he's got the pipe in his mouth, right? So he's like still alive. So even knowing all of that going into the movie, I was like still really thrown off by that scene. It just is so scary to watch.
And it's his first appearance as a character too, which is like also really chilling. I agree, that really like knocked me sideways a little bit, where I went, oh God, the movie's going, like, he's gonna be fine.
Exactly. And then I think also the scene immediately following that, where they're in that kind of like vacant lot basically, and Anthony Garfield is in that super weird animal costume, and he walks up to him and they're talking to Tony, to Heath Ledger, trying to get him to be like, who are you? You don't remember anything about yourself? What are you doing here? What do you want? I love that scene.
Yeah. And Vern Troyer is so good in that scene too.
He is so funny this whole movie.
He's great in this movie.
He just the whole time is like, I'm really annoyed by everybody. I don't get why anybody can't be as calm as I am. I'm obviously the calmest person here. I don't get it.
And then it's kind of cool, too, that, like, we find out he's the one in charge at the end.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Like, that's kind of amazing, because I feel like, as a person, like, Percy probably got smacked down so much for being a little person. And like, he even makes jokes about that the whole time, where he's like, well, what would you do if you didn't have me? Get a midget?
You buy a midget.
Like, so it's nice to see, I guess, in a way, like somebody reclaiming something that could be considered a disability.
Yeah. Yeah. I think his character is super interesting. And, I was going to start talking about the monk scene, but maybe I should chill.
I mean, you can.
I think...
Questions. I have questions.
I have so many questions, but I did really love what happens in that scene where Dr. Parnassus is talking to the devil, and the devil is kind of like interviewing him, and he's saying, so... what is it that you all do here? And he says, you know, everybody's telling, we have to continue telling this story. And this story has to keep being told. We have to keep speaking it out loud. And, you know, if we stop, the world will end. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, the devil says, well, this is obviously so able to be proven false. And you watch him like take speech from everybody's mouths. Which, okay, I don't know about you, but it really made me think of Spy Kids.
Oh,
I immediately was like, this is the same little trope from Spy Kids. He takes the like speech away from everybody, and they keep trying to take over. All the other monks keep trying to take over and keep telling the story. And he eventually gets to where everybody's silent, and they're just kind of sitting there, Dr. Parnassus and the devil. And Dr. Parnassus is like, you know, somebody somewhere else is telling a story. We're all always telling stories. And I think that's something that had really stuck with me. And I don't think I realized I had gotten it from this movie, but the thoughts of everybody's always telling a story somewhere in any kind of different form. And that's what keeps us, maybe that's what's keeping us going, is like telling your story, a creative story, a folklore, whatever it is. Like, that's something that keeps people going in times of crisis. So anyway, that's something that I pulled from the movie that I thought was super cute.
Yeah, I love that. And it's interesting too, that storytelling keeps, like, at least in this movie, storytelling keeps the devil away.
Yes. Story away keeps the story a day keeps the devil away.
Quilt that. Yeah. Make a little
little cross stitch panel for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can do that.
That is a lovely thing to take away. I mean, did we need Christopher Plummer and some like monk makeup? Probably not.
It's also so like Avatar, their makeup too. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah. I think that part of Terry Gilliam's like appeal, and I think he gets away with things, is because he just does it. Like, yeah. He just does it. And we sit there and we go, well, I don't know about this. Like, it's hard to like, Why was Vern Troyer in blackface? Why was it a thing?
It makes absolutely no sense. It makes no sense.
And they just do it.
He's like, yeah. Terry Gilliam's like, yeah, we'll do it and it'll make sense and continue on. I feel like that scene is also so cool. So they've kind of reinvented themselves. And they're doing this very flashy show that Heath Ledger is leading. And it's a stark difference from their kind of shabby, like rundown show. And now they're doing this, Heath Ledger as Tony, he says, we need to find a different audience. He says, we need to find a different audience. And they immediately go from being outside of trashy bars and, you know, terrible nightlife people to being fanciest part of town where everybody is, you know, very well dressed, fancy coats. And they also say, we don't accept money. You know, if you want to see it, we would love to enlighten you, but you don't have to pay us money. And it's so funny. But still, we sit there for an entire time and you're like, Vern Troyer's in blackface. Why is this happening? And then one woman says, I would like to adopt that small black child.
And oh my God.
What? This is the only acknowledgement that we're going to have. Okay.
And then they're like, whoa, 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 you can't. It's like, what is happening?
It's also what stories are they, speaking of stories, what story are they all telling? Because Valentina is like sexy, naked mistress Eve in the garden. Uh-huh. And Tony is just in his very nice suit with the mysterious mask on.
Oh, Andrew Garfield is dressed as a woman.
Yes.
Why?
Like an older fat woman. And I'm like, again, he looks like a Aunt Petunia from Harry Potter. I'm like, what's going on here? I can't remember what is
Parnassus is like drunk.
Oh God. Yes, true.
I don't know what he's, I thought he was just dressed as Father Time.
Yeah. Oh, I think you're right. I think he just has on like his white outfit and like a really long, his beard.
Yeah. They were like, he has a great line somewhere around that time where they're like, you're drunk. And he's like, I'm not drunk. I'm grumpy. Can relate. So they just like didn't give him a different outfit because he's grumpy.
Oh my God. That whole scene is super very interesting. And that's the first time that we see a different person portraying Heath Ledger in the Imaginarium. He goes in.
Yeah, that's the first time we see Deb. I thought that scene too, because I also was like, damn, this is so weird. I thought that scene too was like an introduction of how much of a jerk Tony kind of was.
Yes.
Because he basically just picked a bunch of stereotypes out of this troupe and just like threw them to it.
Yup.
Yeah. So like watching it, I was like, are we trying to see that? Like, are we trying to be shown that he sucks?
Mm.
And he like inflammatory to be inflammatory, which is the worst person. And then we learn that not only is he kind of a dick, but he steals money from children's charities.
And is just a huge liar on top of it. Anytime he's given the option to tell the truth in this movie, he does not. I don't know if we actually ever really hear from his mouth a fact.
That is interesting.
And it's so bizarre. It's like he just is so deceitful. And it's like great that Heath Ledger is playing that, because I want to believe everything that he says. I want to believe him from the moment they find him and they try to bring him back to life. And he's like, oh yeah, I don't know at all who I am. I can't remember my name. I want to believe him so badly from that moment. But yeah, we really do see just how deceitful he is.
Do you remember like the first time they meet Tony and they're like, what's your name? He's like, I don't know. Like, don't you have a driver's license? And he's like, what?
He's like,
also, when does this movie take place?
Oh my God, who knows? I read somewhere that it takes place in, quote, the present. And I was like, what present? What present?
Present where?
When they are outside the bar, I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, I definitely have seen these people. That makes sense. When they're on that super duper fancy street, I'm like, I have no idea where we are.
Yeah, not a clue. It's like a mall, you know?
Yeah, it's like almost Versailles in how fancy it is. It's bizarre. Yeah.
And like, there's like vague, weird accents all over the place. Like Heath Ledger's got an Australian accent, which is also cool to hear.
Yeah.
But then you have Colin Farrell, who's clearly Irish, and Johnny Depp's doing his best Jack Sparrow. And Jude Law is like upper crust British.
Exactly. It's just, where are we, friends? I would love some more context.
But then also, like, again with the lying, the first scene that they meet him and he puts that contraption on his head and he's just like, your name is Tony. He's like, oh, Tony, okay. He's like, Tony Preston. I don't think that's his last name. I just made that up, but I think it sounds like that.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, anything else? He's like, nope, that's it.
He's like, nope, that's it. That's a very exhausting work. Oh, God. So tiring.
And, like, Tony clearly just found that, we're seeing that he sees the tabloid where it says like famous philanthropist in jail or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
And he just crumples it up and throws it away. And it's like, ah, yes, destroyed. The evidence has been destroyed.
You'll never figure me out. No.
I threw that piece of paper away. There's this amazing line, and like in a time where, you know, philanthropy is interesting intersection of like who can we trust and why is it not Elon Musk,
but like, that's a book.
That's my next look forward to my next podcast, who can we trust? Not Elon Musk. But like there's this quote that I wrote down that one of the journalists asked Colin Farrell, Tony, at like this big sort of gala that they're having for the name of the children's charity is Suffer the Little Children. Just hilarious. But then a journalist comes up and goes, aren't you running the risk to entrench the need for charity by increasingly institutionalizing it?
I
died.
I paused my TV and just went, wait a minute. What?
And as an administrator in the nonprofit sector, nonprofit arts sector, I'm sure you feel a certain way about that.
It hit way too hard. It hit home. I just was like, oh, Jesus, this movie is a little too poignant right now. Accurate though.
Yeah, I also, and in an age of like, say it but not necessarily do it as well, I was like, my God, we had our finger on the pulse in 2009 on something.
Jesus.
I believe it's in Jude Law's dream sequence, mm-hmm. when all those men are chasing him, like the angry one
yes.
in the business suits, And then at the end, they just like bring down a big old poster and the police come out and dance. And it just says, "Join the fuzz. We love violence." And they sing a song.
I was, and they're like, all in like skirts and heels and almost doing a Broadway-esque tap number. I also was like, again, how on point can we be? I wanted to put that on my Instagram story, and then I was like, okay, I don't wanna be too giving people too much of a reason to watch Imaginarium.
Like, it is on Showtime. Yeah, I thought that was just a very strange coincidence.
Yeah.
I also hated, so this is something I hated about this movie, is that Parnassus lies to Valentina and tells her she's 12.
Gross.
But they are constantly selling her body in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that she at one point does have a moment to like yell at him and be like, what am I, a fucking mistake? You know, like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
I'm not the reason for your life. I have my own life, which I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. But then we find out she's not 12. No, she's 15.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kiss her and have sex with her on a boat and shit.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird because she starts, when she's talking to Andrew Garfield about her boyfriend, her birthday being soon, and she's like, I'm obvious. She's like, honestly, look at me. Do I look like I'm 12? She's aware of the fact that she's not 12, and she feels, I don't know if she feels more grown than that or what, but it is still disgusting that she's 15 and like, yeah, he's constantly having her on display as that like very feminine, angelic, come to me beautiful character. It's so bizarre. And also, I think even I'm troubled by the dream sequence. It's not a dream sequence, it's a flashback where he's explaining kind of how he got involved in the devil, and he sees her mother. Uh-huh. And Lily Cole plays her mother, and it's that scene where they're like almost about to kiss. I'm like, okay, I get it that she's supposed to be her mom, but like, this is still weird. This is still not good for me.
I felt a little not great about that. So she was born in 1987. So
Lily Cole.
Yeah. So she's a few years older than I am.
Ooh, how old was she filming this?
Bill only puts her at maybe 18. This was filmed in 2009.
Nine, yeah.
Yeah, 1920. So she was probably 21 when they filmed this.
Okay.
My math is completely off. I'm not hired to do math. I just...
It's okay. I believed you.
Thank you. But yeah, that probably is about correct. But still, every scene partner in this movie is like... Christopher Plummer was like in his 80s. Mm-hmm. And Colin Farrell's in his 40s, and Andrew Garfield probably closer in age because I think he's around the same age as I am.
Yeah. But,
like, I don't know. She's like tossed around a lot.
Yeah. And that's just her. And she's also really the only female character for the entire film. You know, there's a couple of people who come in for a few moments, and all of those women are made to look idiotic.
Unattractive,
old, fat, just like stereotypical, the exact opposite of how she presents. And it's really interesting to be like, oh, she is the beautiful woman in this movie. Just kidding, she's a 15-year-old.
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting too is that like they try to hyper feminize her. Mm-hmm. But Valentina not on stage is like sort of just running around in like rags, and her hair is big and frizzy and
loves to smoke. Where is she getting these cigarettes from?
She loves to smoke cigarettes.
Where is she getting them from?
Yeah. And she doesn't behave in a way, and maybe this is like what they were sort of pointing at, that like she doesn't behave in the way that her father or like all these like people who are trying to control her want her to be.
Yeah.
He only says something about that once and then disappears from the narrative in a significant
entirely.
Yeah. And then just becomes again like arm candy for Colin Farrell.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, they make her look so grown up in that scene. And I guess that is the point, but she looks like, she looks at least 27, 28, 29, probably. She looks so grown. And I'm like, yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, not great. Not great. But Terry Gilliam too is not, I don't find him to be, I don't find any of those Monty Python guys to be particularly kind.
Yeah. Portrayals of women, yeah.
No. Which is definitely annoying because you wish that something cool, like visually cool like this,
mm-hmm.
could be less centered around like the white dude experience
of women, yeah.
Yeah. And in this in particular, it's like the older guy. Because it's clear that Terry Gilliam made this movie like from Parnassus's point of view.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to see the imaginative old guy anymore, so fuck it, you know? And sometimes it's like, well, it depends on what the imaginative old guy has to say.
Exactly.
Nobody's trying to like tell you to stop. Yeah. We just want you to do better.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I'm thinking of like, now I'm really thinking about the women that we see and that scene again, Jude Law is part of the Imaginarium where all of the guys in the suits, they like run home to their mom and mm-hmm. they run into her skirt. It's so,
Yeah.
Like what is, yeah. Anyway. Boop, boop.
God, there's a lot to unpack in this.
There's a lot.
I also love that like, Mr. Nick, a.k.a. Tom Waits, a.k.a. the devil.
The devil.
He constantly is, like, setting himself up for failure, if that makes sense.
He is, yes, this is his yes. He loves to bet. He loves a good bet.
He loves a good bet, and even every time he wins, he's like, damn, I won.
He's like, what does he say at the end? He's like, oh, well, I guess I just won.
Yeah. And it's like kind of disappointed. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Like the devil tempted us to make a bet. And there's all this like Garden of Eden imagery in this movie as
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he didn't expect us to take it. The snake was like, take the apple, yo. I bet you it'll taste good. I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there. And then in the garden, you're like, yeah, totally.
No. That's so funny. He is I love this representation of the devil. I mean, I think it's so very on point, you know, the like the little bowler hat and always has a cigar. Like it's very an image we've definitely seen before of that evil man in the bowler hat, but I think it's just Tom Waits. It's so on point. And I think I mentioned his vocal quality before, but like he just, there's something he brings to it where you instantly feel grimy, just like, who is this man? If I saw him on the street, I'd be like, yeah, that's the devil. Twice about it, I'd be like, yeah, that man is the devil and let's keep walking.
I'm going to cross the street. Yeah, definitely not wearing a mask. Crossing the street, social distancing.
He is the person coughing on people. You know it. I know he is. Yeah.
He needs to see the manager. But like Tom Waits in a similar way, because this is like the era that he was almost an actor.
Mm-hmm.
He showed up in Seven Psychopaths.
Mm.
And you're like, oh shit, Tom Waits is like a really good actor when he just gets to do Tom Waits shit.
So good. I was very surprised. I was like, this is dope. Like just being a good character and getting to kind of be Johnny Depp-esque and just being ridiculous to a point of like of just being a character I enjoyed it so much.
And he like owns the screen every time he's on it too, which is what you need from the devil.
Yeah.
I think my favorite image in this movie is when they win, quote unquote, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Tony, because he is sort of a self, you know, like self a dickhead, he commits suicide to get away from all his troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, I'm assuming. And the devil just goes, well, I don't know what's next. Like, and he floats away on the clouds with his little umbrella.
Yes.
It's so good because he's not graceful in any way, shape, or form.
No.
He's like stomping his way on a cloud, like keeping his balance with this dirty umbrella. And it's so beautiful.
And he like calls back to Parnassus and he's like, I don't know. She's your daughter. Shouldn't you know where she is?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, man.
It's like, what the fuck do you want from me? I'm out. Like,
I love it. I also love the scene where, like, I think this is, maybe this is the first time we're in the Imaginarium. The guy who's trying to choose between the 12 steps, like the 12-step program, and the bar. And I think the bar itself turns into the devil, turns into him. Oh my God, that imagery, I was like, oh, I totally get it. Instantly, I was like, 12 steps, 12-step program. Or a bar. Bar is the devil. I see that. Got it instantly. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Yeah. Like, yeah, I think for every like choice in this movie, I think there's one that's like, oh God, that's so great.
Yeah.
I
was reading some more facts and there was like, there's a scene at the very end where the devil is in that same mall where Parnassus is outside of, and Valentina and Anton are like with their child having a nice dinner, and the devil is walking through there and he like offers an apple to the nuns, and you're like, oh yeah, again, imagery of Eden in the Bible, how on point.
And also shit just like keeps repeating itself.
Mm-hmm.
Which I also think is interesting in like allegory, you know, like sort of religious allegories, like this movie feels like.
Yes.
The fact that, like, because we're human, we're going to keep messing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends on how we deal with the ways that we're growing and learning. And, like, the devil is in the details for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, like, we don't have to follow his lead if we, like, Parnassus kind of learns that. And, yeah, he's still alive, that old fuck, but, like, he's doing little paper puppet shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not in charge. Percy is.
Mm-hmm.
And like Percy gets him to like get his shit together.
And then they make it a more like a more relatable show with the little puppets, which I think are much easier for the children to understand.
And so beautiful. So well made. That paper contraption.
I was like, please give me one of those. It's like a combo pop-up book, and the ones where you have the little stick figures that go behind the different images. It was so, I would love to have one of those.
It's so well done. Again, Terry Gilliam with like the practical effects.
Yeah.
Whereas the CGI, you go like, okay, whatever. But like the practical shit, so good.
Yeah, I totally agree. The as much cool stuff as they could do in the Imaginarium, because they could do literally anything because it's a green screen. The images that I love are the scenes outside of that. Like I said, that one scene where they're in that just really run down middle of nowhere place. I'm like, what's happening here? We don't even get enough information on, have they stayed in this place before? Is this a place they come often to rest? Like, is this a place they just found? And I think the imagery of it is so beautiful.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And I also love that our parting message of the Imaginarium is just, does it come with a happy ending? Somebody asks. And Vern Troyer says, sorry, we can't guarantee that.
Yes.
And that's like, that's great.
Sorry, we can't guarantee that.
That's not it. This is kind of a hilarious, this is a great review of this movie. I think that it sounds like it's kind of in line what we're talking about. It says the film is flawed, but you don't expect narrative drive or coherence. You go for the director's flights of fancy, possessed of an imagination that throws off more sparks than a fizzing. He's a spinning wheel, and Gilliam is a fabulous fabulist.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I agree with that. I definitely think that there's, as we saw in trying to, you know, give the entire plot of the movie, there's a lot to it, and it can be too much to try to understand in full. I don't think I really understand in full the point of the movie. But what's always intrigued me most about it is one, it's just about having an imagination and like allowing yourself to explore that. But the other part that I like the backstory. I like that this is something that people decided to keep going for Heath Ledger. Yeah.
Because this other one, this is a rotten review, but it's like, it's like half rotten. It says, a trippy, uneven ride whose best assets are its imagination, Heath Ledger's final performance, and the three surprise stars who act as his replacements. And I agree with that, too. And I also think that it's, like, really, we can say what we want about the personal lives of a lot of celebrities, and, like, Johnny Depp in particular right now.
Yes.
Questionable at best, and his libel trial is currently going on, and it's so weird. Oh, my God. Oh,
God.
All the information coming out about it is just so strange. But the fact that, like, these three friends, like, Heath Ledger's friends and Terry Gilliam reached out to only people that were Heath Ledger's friends to come and, like, pick up his torch and honor the work that he had done. I think that that's just really beautiful. And also, his daughter, Matilda, was left out of his will.
Yeah.
On, like, a website, and they donated everything from this film to her.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, that's like, that's, in the world of this film, that is the opposite of what Tony would do.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, it's like a great, almost slap in the face of this like main character, you know, but a great way to honor the legacy that Heath Ledger left behind by literally giving it to his legacy, to his next of kin. You know,
and that's interesting. That also like plays on a lot of what we were talking about. Lily Cole's character, Valentina, we see women portrayed so in just all around poor ways in this movie, or not really fleshed out, I guess. But it's kind of comforting somewhere in your heart to know that, okay, this did go to benefit somebody, and somebody who was you know, probably deserving. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how old she is now.
I have no idea.
She must be, I mean, if this was 2019, that's 10 years ago, 11 years ago. So she's got to be like in her 20s, I guess.
Oh, God, wow. No. She is 14 right now.
She's 14. Okay.
Yeah. Born in 2005.
Wild. And then he died 2 years later. That's upsetting. I do think that this movie does help with his legacy, and also to like, as a bittersweet reminder that it was about to get good.
It was about to get real good. We were about to get, you know.
Who knows? Yeah. Because in like a 4 year period, he made like Brokeback, which is beautiful films ever made. and then
fun story. I remember sneaking and watching Brokeback Mountain as a child and was probably too young, but like, holy shit. I was like, this is cinematography. This is beautiful.
Yeah. That movie. Woo. He is so good in that movie.
He's so good. Okay, anyway, sorry, go on.
Sorry, yeah, that we could talk about Brokeback Mountain all day.
All day.
I it's a nice, and the fact that this film is called, like at the end it says, a film from Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like a gift that's neatly packaged. And I'm sure some people who are like pessimists or whatever will be like, well, I wish he had gone out in a better one. And it's like, okay. what do you want?
What do you want me to do?
Would you like to write to the editor? Would you like to call up Waits and be like, hey, Tom Waits, I know you have some sort of connection with the underworld, but
got to make this happen. We got to bring, we got to get Heath Ledger one more better movie. What? Not how this works.
People are so dumb.
Can't agree with that. Yes.
A person is smart. People are stupid. which could be a good allegory for this movie.
actually, yeah. I could totally see that being like stamped at the bottom of the movie. Sounds like something Percy would say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Do you have any sort of, like, closing thoughts you'd like to say about this movie? About
Oh, man. I guess, I think, I know that this is a podcast about Johnny Depp, and I know we talked mostly about Heath Ledger for most of this time, but I still think this is a good movie to see. I would say, you know, don't spend too much money on it. You know, Showtime's got that free couple of days if you want to watch it there. But I think it's just an interesting film to kind of get your brain thinking. If you like movies where you're not always going to understand the plot at the end, and that's okay, definitely would suggest watching this. And dare I say, maybe because Johnny Depp's in it for so little, that's even more reason to watch it.
Yeah, he doesn't do too much. And what he does do, he does fine.
He does fine. He does himself.
I often find that I wind up talking about not Johnny Depp.
Yes.
In this Johnny Depp podcast. Because this film, I wouldn't call a Johnny Depp film. I'd call a Heath Ledger film.
Yes.
But he does show up in it.
He is there. He's present.
He's present, and he looks a lot like Heath Ledger.
They look like brothers in this. It's kind of spooky.
Very strange. But then it's funny when we shift to Jude Law. I know we're like keep talking about this. We shift to Jude Law, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's clearly not Heath Ledger. And then we shift to Colin Farrell, and it's like, oh, that's definitely not Heath Ledger.
Definitely not. Very far away. Still really handsome men. Really handsome. But not saying. Extremely handsome.
This is a very handsome movie, and maybe that's my parting thought on it. Handsome movie. Oh my God, Mariah, this was so much fun. I cannot thank you enough for doing this.
I can't thank you enough for having me on. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd get to scream about this weirdo movie.
It's joyous, and I'm glad that I was able to share this weird movie with you.
Thank you.
Remind us again where we can find you.
Yeah, what's up? You can find me at MG Willigers at Instagram. That is EMGEEWILLIKERS. Or you can also catch my poetry Instagram, which is mariah.g.poetry. That's me.
Cool. Yay! And again, I am at Less Than a Muffin. All these links will be available. If you made it this far, we love you.
Oh, we love you so much.
We love you so much. Thank you for listening. Stay safe out there. Wear your fucking mask.
Oh my God, please. And wash your hands.
Wash your damn hands. And we're trying to have birthdays in the open. So I thought that was going to happen. And now it's looking bleak.
Real bleak.
So America, get your shit together. Mariah, I love you, my friend.
I love you, my friend, as well.
You are a joy. Thank you so much for being on this. And goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.